Our speaker today doesn't need much introduction. Reverend Fulgence Najimana. And we were lucky enough to have supper last night, and we enjoyed discussion, and he's going to present to us today. So welcome, Reverend Fulgence.
Have you or someone you know been in a situation where things needed to change and there was enough clarity about it that for some reason it didn't happen? I know I have. The inability to let go is pervasive in our lives. But for us to live happy and fulfilled lives, we will need to stop bargaining with a hurting reality. We need to overcome fear. We need to forgive ourselves and others. And we need to disrupt our limiting beliefs. For most people, change is hard. It takes a lot of work, and it's frightening. Some struggle with anger, and that prevents them from building fulfilling and lasting relationships. Others struggle with small habits that gradually destroy their lives. And very often, it isn't that we lack clarity about that. We know so well what needs to be done, but we still cling to what is only destroying us and not working. Sometimes I wonder whether the fact that we do not feel the hurt makes us relaxed when it comes to facing the status quo. I was born in a remote village in the central part of Burundi. We had, and we still have, two seasons, the dry and the rainy. Like some people here, I look forward to warmer temperatures in the winter. We always looked forward to the dry season. After all, the rain season was muddy, it rains every day, it's slippery, it's hard to move around, and not fun to play. The dry season is when most celebrations are held. Wedding ceremonies, memorial ceremonies, and also school vacation. During that season, people in villages cook outside the house, in the open. Food is cooked with firewood and dry cow dung, and people eat outside as well. When I was 5, we had a big celebration at home. Many people came, we had fun, we danced. The following morning, I was playing with other kids outside, and I stepped in the fire that was used to cook the day before. I felt like I was losing my foot, but instantly and almost instinctively, I pulled out what remained of my foot. I was devastated. I was in pain. Some elders came to the rescue with traditional herbs, and my burn was able to heal, and after 2 long months, I was able to play again. When I think about letting go, I go back to that experience. when my foot was in fire, I did not have a debate about different possibilities and different perspectives and options. I didn't check what other people's opinions were about that, not even expert opinions. I knew my foot was burning, and I pulled out as fast as I could. When it comes to letting go, I think we spend a lot of time on the bargaining stage. In her groundbreaking book on death and dying, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross identified five stages on the grief process, and one of them is bargaining. In the Kubler-Ross model, bargaining comes after anger and before depression. At that stage, we have long past denial. We know what has happened or what is coming, but we are still negotiating some alternatives to the reality that we face. Yes, our mind tricks us big time. If we need something really bad, as my son usually says, we work hard to make it happen by letting go of the obstacles. But the reality is that some things we need to let go do not show any sense of urgency. It's not like a burning fire. And we do not appreciate how terrible the damage is or how fast the progress is, and then we relax. The hurt is slow but gradual, and we procrastinate. In the process of letting go, we all also know that fear is part of the equation. Human beings cherish certainty. We would like to predict the future. We want to know what will happen tomorrow. We would like to know whether our friends will be there for us. And for those with no friends, maybe the insurance companies, or the state, or the like. We can all understand why it's hard to let go of things we have, for the things we can only hope for or imagine. Because we know what we are letting go, but we do not know what we will get. For me, the fundamental question when it comes to letting go is, what must die so I can live fully? What kind of discomfort do I have to face so I can have a meaningful life? How do I allow life to take me to new places, to unimagined realities? Fear is part of our everyday, and some psychologists say that a moderate dose of fear is actually necessary for us not to be complacent and get comfortable with the easy over the right ways, and that's the concept of productive paranoia, developed by some authors like Jim Collins. But beyond the acceptable dose, we will be paralyzed. We will not start new projects. We will think doom for ourselves, for others, and for the world. Fear prevents us from shaking the status quo. It reduces our hope, even our optimism, to nothing by preventing us from acting. It prevents us from standing for what we believe in the name of safety. Clinging to the person we used to be and the things we used to have is another obstacle to that process. Fear paralyzes us, pushes us to live in the past and hoping that we'll get salvation from past events. But I think letting go is in many ways a leap of faith. And this is the hard part for our minds that is looking for certainty and push us to always planning. Steve Harvey, the American comedian and television host, likens the process of letting go with jumping off a cliff. If one jumps and pulls the parachute cord, it will open and the person can soar in life. The alternative is to stay where the person is. Overcoming fear is to take the jump and believe that there is more to life than the current miserable state of affairs. Do yourself a favor, he says, and jump. Letting go is also difficult due to stories we tell ourselves about ourselves, the stories we tell others, and the stories we tell about the world. We have expectations of ourselves, and other people do the same as well. We think we have a pretty good idea of how life should unfold. And when things do not go the way we have hoped, or do so only for a short period of time, we get angry. It is as if life is interfering in our story. I was told I need to be strong as a man. There are things our parents told us, and there is a way we think life will have to go. And letting go is to also let go of that story. And it's not easy. In 2006, on a visit to France, there was an elderly lady living in the apartment building where I was hosted. And one day I saw her carrying groceries and other heavy stuff. Back home, I would not have imagined looking at that person carrying heavy stuff and me with empty hands. So I rose up to the occasion and told her that I would like to help. She politely declined the offer. I couldn't believe it. How come someone refuses to be helped when clearly the person needs help? When I told the story to my hosts, they told me that for her it is important to be autonomous and to do everything all by herself. I was welcomed to a different world. But it all had to do with our respective stories. The stories that she and me were living by. I recently was asked by a colleague during an interview what Canadians and Burundians can learn from each other when it comes to interdependence. Canadians can learn to depend more on community, I said, and Burundians can learn to create room for individual rights. It is a matter of emphasis. We all need community, and we also need to be autonomous individuals. It's a matter of balance. But can we do it alone? It's hard to do it alone. We all seem to know that. But there are limiting beliefs. There are stories we tell ourselves or well told that push us into a corner. Letting go of that extreme is hard, but that's the way we'll meet our legitimate needs. Can we let go of privilege? The Canadian Unitarian Council recently organized a racial justice webinar where people were discussing racial justice issues and how Unitarian Universalists can live our values in that context. I shared my experience of being treated differently because of how I look. Contrary to other things that we have a hard time letting go, privileged people are not always aware of their privilege. Privilege is the water that one swims in. And there has been a lot of discussion in our movement lately around treatment reserved to people from minority groups, and it is clear that it is not an enviable treatment. And we need to have a clarity around that situation. If one finds out that the way he or she looks protects from abuse, gives access to resources, and provide a peace of mind, there is a suspicion of privilege. And once we have clarity, the real work begins. And this is the hard part. The reality is that privileged people are part of the system or the culture that they want to change, and a culture that they greatly benefit from. So to change it is a big deal. And the awareness of the privilege that one has may determine how relationships are built, may help put in the open the implicit bias at work in our lives, and may help question the assumptions and eventually help us relate differently. However, this enlightenment doesn't go unpunished. People will have to face the discomfort of accepting the reality as it is. In the Western world, where we are, white is the default. And in times of crisis, doubt, uncertainty, even the most enlightened are capable of sinking to their lowest instincts of fear, resentment, and prejudice. You can just watch what has just happened in the U.S. elections to have an idea about that. And living the values is to be aware of that looming danger and hold oneself to different and higher standards. Who do you have in your circle? Who do you choose to trust? Who is missing? Why are you scared? And what are you scared from? Once we let go of that discomfort, we need to act. Some call it to be a good ally. Others call it to be an accomplice. I simply call it to live a brave life. Confronting racism and privilege calls us to live bravely. When we see something, we say something. When we hear something, we say something. Because our values are lived in public. And the best place to live our values is in our regular circles. The risk is, by living bravely, we do not make only friends. We also make enemies. And I suspect that is probably the reason why many people choose to play it safe whenever these conversations come up. And this is where a fundamental question is asked of us. Are our values worth suffering for? Are our values worth dying for? Or are our values just to have a good time? The death may not be physical, but it sure will be metaphorical. When most of the things people have believed are challenged, when the story structures people have built crumble, when strong relationships and even our integrity are tested. People are shaken to the core. This is a question of alignment between values, privilege, and the current reality. And there are choices to be made. And this is a choice of our movement has to make, as well as individual members. Do we have to transpire in what we do, who we do it with, how we do it, how we tell truth to power, and how we educate our children without shielding them from the reality of racism and the positive role that they can play to change it. In his book, The Secret of Letting Go, Guy Finley recommends the concept of release. Releasing what no longer works, releasing what doesn't serve any useful purpose, releasing what hurts me and others and the environment. This is the call of our lives. This is the call of our faith. Is it working? No. Does it hurt you or others? Yes. Are you having a hard time forgiving yourself and others? If this is your reality, maybe, just maybe, it's time to let it go. Amen and blessed be.